Big Brother, mainstream media, government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. It's Monday, September 19th. I'm not Alex Jones. He'll be back tomorrow. This is Aaron Dyke sitting in. But we do have a power-packed show. We've got Wall Street being occupied by protesters. We've got QE3 in the works. We've got Ron Paul with the really big straw poll win over the weekend in California and a shut-down Texas straw poll. We also have the Black Caucus saying they'd be in revolution if it weren't for Obama, or marching on White House anyway, and plenty of other stories. We have lots of guests joining us today. Lou Rockwell coming up in half an hour to talk about Ron Paul, the dollar, and the rest of it. Can Ron Paul win? That's the question he's been dealing with. He's had the interview with Alex Jones posted consistently for the past 2 weeks or so since he was on our nightly news TV show. We also have Rizwan Sabir. Not sure if I'm even pronouncing that name right, but we'll have a chance to speak with him and hear about how he was researching terrorism in Al-Qaeda for a PhD project, but was instead arrested. And he eventually won in his appeal in court proceedings and was awarded money. We're going to talk to him about that situation and the dangerous clampdown on the right to research, the right to free speech, and the rest of it. And then coming up in the last hour, we have Alan Watt, who's one of the most versatile and deeply researched people I've ever spoken with in this community of conspiracy theorists or what you will, people who really just knew what was going on several years in advance, who predicted the economic collapse, and who understand the people who are really running the system and why these things keep happening the way they do. So for right now, we're going to talk about Ron Paul cheated out of Texas straw poll win. Congressman would have defeated Governor Perry in his own state. Now, of course, Ron Paul won the California straw poll over the weekend with 44%, I believe. Perry was at a 29%. You know, Romney and Bachman were down there under 10%, and all the other candidates were well below 2%, even less than 1%. Very strong win. And then we have the Texas straw poll just canceled for, quote, lack of interest. Is that because Ron Paul, also from Texas, was going to head up against Governor Rick Perry and it would have been embarrassing for him to lose? Well, obviously that's the question. Paul Joseph Watson, Ron Paul is riding high again after his California straw poll victory yesterday, but some Paul supporters are questioning why the Texas straw poll was canceled for lack of interest and whether it was actually killed because the congressman would have inflicted an embarrassing defeat on Governor Rick Perry in his own state. According to a June 16 Washington Times report, the Texas GOP decided to cancel the straw poll, which was held on September 1st last year, because of a lack of interest expressed by the candidates and due to fears the event would not recoup the financial outlay. So there you have it. Even when Ron Paul wins, he still gets censored because they just don't even take the poll. He basically won in Iowa, if you discount the fact that Bachman bought her votes. Ron Paul was within the margin of error of winning anyway. He continues to show extremely strongly, and the mainstream media just basically won't acknowledge the elephant in the room. No pun intended with the GOP, but Ron Paul, of course, the only true candidate anywhere in that mix. Perhaps more important, but far less talked about, Operation Twist, Fed ready for QE3. And they've been quietly, tacitly acknowledging that this is going to happen, whether it's called QE3 or not, but have been dallying on whether or not to actually launch a quantitative easing number 3. Daily Forex Fundamentals, written by Donks Bank, says the FOMC will probably get QE3 rolling by the end of the year or early in 2012. We'll get more into that on the other side of the break. Plenty more, lots of guests coming up, and really everything just coming undone. The bailouts taking their toll, the larger economic crash coming, and the political games always in stride. I'm Aaron Dyke. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the break. Infowars.com.
He's the T-Rex of political talk. Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network.
We're back again on this Monday, September 19th show. I'm Aaron Dykes filling in. Alex will be back tomorrow, but again, he manages to keep working even on his well-deserved days off. Friday on the InfoWars Nightly News show, we aired a special report he taped even after he had already taken off about the NFL pat-downs, the TSA-style pat-downs coming to NFL stadiums, all of them. And a call to boycott and no longer participate in those stadium games and no longer even watch it if possible. Just disengage Gandhi style from really what's a fascist overlay of bread and circuses where even the security has to go on there, allowing the police state in even to the realm of distraction. We're going to play that later in the show after we speak with Lou Rockwell. So stay tuned for Alex Jones' special report and he'll be back tomorrow. But of course, the InfoWars Nightly News is just beginning. It's getting stronger and stronger every week. I sat in Friday when we reviewed some of the highlights from just our first 2 weeks. It's incredible just how much the New World Order has moved down the field in that short span of time. And the resistance is heating up too. Before the break, we were starting to get into how the Fed is ready for QE3. That's Kurt Nimmo from this morning. We also have the Fed debates approach as inflation fears grow. We have the EU bonds rollover debt with Chinese bailout. We have Fed expected to launch new program while Europe debt troubles bubble. Rubini, Greece should default, leave the euro. Is September 20th Greek default day? And Europe digs even deeper debt hole. So everything is happening with Greece right now, and of course the Americans are on the hook for the bailout. Obviously, as I said, the Chinese involved as well, but a new wave of the Great Depression, the greatest recession, whatever you choose to call it, or whatever you see coming, we've been predicting it for some time, and things are just starting to hit a new plateau, I believe. And on the QE3 matter, we were discussing how, following the continued deterioration in economic data, we expect the Fed to take action in the form of a twist in the central bank's portfolio towards longer maturity government bonds, the Danish Bank writes, that is the FOMC, Danske Bank, I guess. Unless we see significant improvements in economic data over the next couple of months, we deem it likely the Fed will initiate QE3, buying more government bonds or mortgages. This could happen by the end of 2011 or early next year, and we don't even know the full implications of QE1 or QE2 quite yet, but we know it's got an inflationary pressure. We're going to have Lou Rockwell up in the next half hour, just in a few minutes from now, and beyond Ron Paul, we're going to get into the dollar, QE3, and the Federal Reserve really is the biggest issue in the room right now. Shifting gears, though, we also have a number of activists occupying Wall Street. I think they're in their fourth day, may even be the fifth day now. I'm not 100%. We've got Madison Rupert. He's written, "No right to protest in America. Occupation of Wall Street thwarted thanks to ignorant police." Back in July, Adbusters began promoting a move to occupy Wall Street in protest of the rampant corruption, market manipulation, and out-of-control greed that is destroying our nation today. Adbusters was hoping for a turnout of some 20,000 angry Americans who would occupy Wall Street for months. Unfortunately, the numbers were a 20th of that. But the real story here is how the police blocked off, didn't allow the protesters into the Wall Street area. They closed off the Federal Reserve Bank as well. We've got a report coming up from Danny Panzella, True Squad TV, one of the activists there in New York. He was the one who tried to occupy the New York Federal Reserve just a few weeks ago, all by himself even. And the police, because they had read about it on Facebook, showed up in force. There was at least 40 police or so surrounding the building. Now I haven't seen all the footage. I've seen some footage, but I would imagine quite a few more police blocking off that entire area. We're going to play a few minutes of that report. Luke Radowski, We Are Change, also down there, spoke with rapper Lupe Fiasco on Building 7 and on the Wall Street issues. He's got a hit single asking, did they really pull Building 7? We've got police block Occupy Wall Street protesters out of AFP, Agence France-Presse. Hundreds of people marched Saturday near Wall Street in New York, but the city thwarted their bid to descend into the heart of global finance itself to protest greed, corruption, and budget cuts. So you have a First Amendment right, supposedly, to appeal to government or so forth, but if you march down to the heart of the beast in Wall Street, they don't want to hear from you. The reason this is exciting, even though it's a lot of diverse groups, I don't agree necessarily with anyone's solution down there, but it's important that they're raising the questions and starting to appeal to the real power source, not even Washington, because government really is just a medium, a go-between for the power structure, for the power dynamics. And Wall Street right now and for some time has held most of that power, the power of our numbers of being regular people in this country and our power through the Constitution and Bill of Rights has been significantly dwindling and has been steadily going down with executive orders, overreach of the executive branch, and, of course, these drastic monetary reforms, if you can call them, a power handover. And so that's why it's interesting that Adbusters, who organized, I suppose, the biggest protest down on Wall Street, they say they plan to stay potentially for months. Many of them wanted to camp out, but as I mentioned, police have been blocking that off. But Adbusters put on their website, "Dear Patriots, rabble-rousers, revolutionaries, thousands will occupy Wall Street. We have our signs, banners, drums, etc. Then we'll get down to business and hold several people's assemblies to decide what our one demand will be." So they're trying to organize a massive protest to have only one demand. Shall we demand that President Obama reinstate Glass-Steagall Act, which prevents, you know, financial houses from doing investment and speculation stuff on top of regular commercial standard activities. Very important law that they broke apart in the 90s, of course, under Clinton, but both sides have been involved. And really, Treasury Secretary Geithner, a protege of Robert Rubin and Summers, Larry Summers, is just continuing that forward, and it's just obscene what they're doing with the derivatives. That would be a great proposal. They also say outlaw flash trading, impose a 1% tax on all financial transactions, something Webster Tarpley's proposed. But they say these are good ideas, but not very energizing. How about we demand the revocation of corporate personhood and decide that's too complicated too? So instead, they suggest we could demand Obama set up an American Democracy Reform Commission tasked with ending the moneyed corruption in Washington. Ending the moneyed corruption in Washington through Obama, who's a complete puppet of Wall Street. Absolute 100% puppet. George W. Bush and the rest of them really have been almost pure puppets as well. So it's just absurd. Of course, they should push for reinstating Glass-Steagall. That would go a very long way in repairing this. But let's just cut now to the Danny Panzella report and find out what he saw down on the Wall Street occupation. Do we have that clip? Yeah, while he's getting that queued up, let's just see what else is going on here.
This is Danny Panzella reporting from Wall Street with this special report for TrueSquad.tv. The New York City Police Department has locked down Wall Street in anticipation of the Occupy Wall Street protests in Lower Manhattan. There seems to be no organized structure, and some attendees refer to the group as a leaderless resistance to corporate greed and monopoly. The protest was largely organized using social networking sites like Facebook and Twitter. While police presence is heavy, the NYPD is light on artillery. There are no cops in riot gear or LRAD crowd control weapons visible on the streets of the financial district. The private Federal Reserve Bank of New York has also closed its two-story steel castle doors in preparation to keep out the barbarians at the gates. While for the most part the protesters seem to be leftists, communists, and socialists calling for an end to capitalism, there's also a contingent of libertarians, anarcho-capitalists, and volunteerists calling for an end to corporate fascism and crony capitalism.
We got some capitalists here, I can see that. We got some socialists as well.
I've noticed that the people here come from so many different backgrounds.
I'm Trotskyist, ICL communist.
I consider myself an anti-consumerist libertarian.
Well, I'm an anarcho-capitalist. Well, above all else, I'm a volunteer.
I'm a Christian. I believe in limited government. I believe in the Constitution.
We recognize that there is a problem, and that is corporate influence in American policymaking.
That our government isn't owned by us anymore.
Where we differ is the approaches on how to resolve that issue.
Well, we pretty much believe in a free market, but people should choose where to live and how they live.
I'm against the system. I'm against capitalism.
The main issue is corporate capitalism.
It looks like people either want to bring it down and restructure it, or bring it down altogether.
The only solution, really, is to bring us back to the Constitution.
I don't think that any person who wants to overturn the system should be turned away. Anyone who believes in the revolution should be part of it.
And honestly, all I see is just people that just want change.
In the days leading up to the protest, the FBI distributed a memo to Wall Street businesses warning that the hacktivist group Anonymous would be in attendance and had threatened to shut down Wall Street networks, and that their businesses should take precautions to secure their clients' data. Undercover law enforcement peppered the crowd, dressed as the infamous Black Bloc Communist Group, and some wore Guy Fawkes masks, the trademark of Anonymous. They walked the crowd, observing and taking photos of activists, cataloging the groups that were in attendance. The undercovers are easily identifiable by their baggy clothes that conceal ankle holsters.
We're going to come back from that. The rest of the report is up on InfoWars. But as you can see, the important thing is that Wall Street itself and the Federal Reserve issue in particular is becoming the issue. You saw last week in the GOP debates, there was a major question on the Federal Reserve. They didn't even dare ask Ron Paul about it. The cat's out of the bag. The question is, are we actually going to hold them down and get them out of government and take our government back peacefully? We'll get more into that. We're just getting started. Guests coming up, Lou Rockwell practically on the other side. Alex back tomorrow, InfoWars.com. Okay, we're back again at InfoWars.com. I'm Aaron Dykes sitting in for Alex. He'll be back so soon you can just feel it. We have the InfoWars Nightly News Show again tonight. Several great guests on there. I don't see the write-up, but I know that it was Alex Adask and Dr. Russell Blaylock are going to be on the program tonight. Alfred Adask, excuse me. I think it was the first time he was on, but very interesting guests. They'll both be on the InfoWars Nightly News tonight. And plenty of other interesting topics we're going to cover as well. Now, as I was getting into before the break, and we're going to continue to bring this up with Lou Rockwell, former Ron Paul campaign manager, president of the Von Mises Institute, or the Mises Institute, and plenty of other credentials as well. And that is the Federal Reserve becoming one of the prominent issues, even in the 2012 campaign. Now, as I mentioned before the break, last week on the CNN GOP debate, they did the Federal Reserve question, would you audit it, or what is your position on the Federal Reserve? And they didn't even ask Ron Paul the question. That's how afraid they were of giving him exposure on an issue he's extremely credible on, has spent his entire career covering. And yet we have marchers in the street surrounding the New York Federal Reserve and the entire Wall Street district, really starting to put the eye of focus on that institution for the first time, the private institution, which really has our whole country in a stranglehold grip and is deeply involved with the European bailouts and all the rest of it. And, of course, QE3 also on the horizon. Now we have support for Obama slips, unease on 2012 candidates. This is in the New York Times. President Obama's support is eroding among elements of his base after a year-long effort to recapture the political center has failed to attract independent voters, according to the latest New York Times CBS News poll, leaving him vulnerable at a moment when pessimism over the country's direction is greater than at any other time since he took office. Now, I've asked the guys to try to find this poll. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to find it in time for the program, but it was only a few weeks ago, and it wasn't just confidence in Obama that's slipping. It's overall confidence in the office of the presidency and of government itself. I know there's been lows like 12% approval of Congress, but you can see a chart somewhere in the mid-60s or so, maybe even 70s at some point, under President Clinton, and it takes us a bit of a dive with the beginning of George W. Bush's presidency, spike again for 9/11, and then from that point all the way to the end of Bush's second term, a straight drop all the way to 7% approval for what I think was the office of the presidency itself. And you could see that timed almost explicitly with the 2008 financial crash and then the re-election, or the election rather, of Obama and a new president only sent the spike back up halfway to about 36% approval for the whole nation, of the whole office and of government itself. And that itself has eroded all the way back down towards at least 11, approaching 7. And that's with all this new financial stuff just beginning. And the point I'm trying to make is that it's a total loss of confidence. Everyone knows the woodworks are coming unglued. This financial stuff is about to sink in big time. And that's why they have the police state ready to go. That's why they prepared for riots. That's why you've seen all these white papers and studies on how to handle the population, because things are going to come unglued. They have no intention of fixing these things. They've used the instrument of government to transfer as much power as possible to that Wall Street contingent, which is the same thing as the Council on Foreign Relations contingent, the Skull and Bones contingent, the Bilderberg contingent, and the rest of it. Now, I think that was a presidential approval poll. Of course, that's been slipping for Obama as well. But obviously, he's going to take a lot of blame for this economic disaster, as he should in some ways for not fighting the system. But the point is, he's a puppet, and the true financial overlords have put in their people, and they're not changing these policies. In fact, as we already pointed out, QE3 is about to start. However, overtly, we don't yet know. We've also seen Ralph Nader, we covered this Friday on the InfoWars Nightly News show, joining the left against Obama, people who think he should be challenged in a primary. Of course he should. He has no claim to the presidency. These aren't kings and dictators. We elected them, but we should send them right back out of office, and it would only bolster the real candidates. Now, we're going to get all into the Ron Paul issue, the dollar, and more with Lou Rockwell coming up on the other side of this break. There's plenty more on the show. Stay tuned. InfoWars.com. InfoWars.com, California dreaming today. That is, if you're a Ron Paul supporter, still celebrating his 44% victory in the California straw poll over the weekend. On the line with us now is Lou Rockwell, editor of LouRockwell.com, one of the best alternative news sites anywhere on the web, boiling everything down. And are you there with us now, Lou?
I sure am, Aaron. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks very much for joining us. So out of the gates, what is your response to Ron Paul's significant straw poll victory over the weekend, other progress he's been making, and where the campaign is headed?
Well, I thought you have a very good article up today on your webpage about how Texas just very conveniently canceled its straw poll because they said there was no interest in it. But of course, as you point out, it was to prevent Perry from being embarrassed by having Ron smack him over the head in the state of which he's governor. And I think that's typical of what's happening with Ron. Of course, the establishment wants to hide things. I this is a terrible thing to admit, but I look at Politico every day, the Politico site, which is a very regime, of course, establishment site. And I was just interested this week in when would they report Ron's amazing victory in the California straw poll. And again, this is a victory, you know, among people who were all officials. These were not students or whatever. And he smashed the other candidate, Perry, Romney, Bachman, who was they brought in Bachman as the keynoter, and they were very, very cold and standoffish to Ron. None of the officials, with the exception of one, went to any of his receptions, or they just, didn't want him there, and yet he won overwhelmingly. So I was interested in, when would Politico, which is the key D.C. political site, when would they report it? It wasn't reported on Saturday. Wasn't reported on Sunday. Last night I noticed that under an article that said something like, why California is going to be electorally insignificant, because, you know, it's the date of the primary or whatever, there was a little tiny subhead, a micro subhead under there about Ron winning the California primary. On this same page, they still had a major headline about Santorum having won the Pennsylvania straw poll, his home state, of course, a week ago. So they still had that up a week later, and they just put, you know, so there's, that's typical. But, you know, I think it hurts them. It doesn't hurt Ron, because all his people know, first of all, nobody who's a Ron Paul supporter is going to Politico to find out what's going on. We just want to see maybe what the establishment is saying, but we're typically not looking for news. But I think this the whole blackout of Ron, all that stuff rebounded on them, hurt them, because, of course, no regular American trusts the mainstream media. I don't care what your political orientation is, or even if you don't have a political orientation. We have an instinctual dislike of the networks, the three government networks that were set up, you know, after World War II. And the rest of the mainstream media, we know that they're a bunch of liars and stenographers for the government. So the fact that they don't like Ron Paul is actually a good thing, because it just stimulates his followers, stimulates his donors. He just raised another $1 million this weekend from regular Americans, average donation of about $56. And that's the way his fundraising goes. He's regular people support him. It's not the Warren Buffetts of the world. In fact, they, of course, want to do anything they can to prevent Ron Paul from doing well. But he is doing well. He's doing, you know, he keeps moving up in the polls. And I always think, even though I'm fascinated by the polls, I always like to put in my political blog on lewrockwell.com. I always like to report what the polls say, but I'm also aware that you can't really trust the polls. And one thing that always sticks in my head is that in the run-up to World War II, well, we now know that both Gallup and the other major polls cooperated with the Roosevelt administration to fake their results, so that it seemed like gradually over time more and more Americans were forgetting into World War II. In fact, that was a lie. Virtually nobody was forgetting into World War II until, of course, Roosevelt's event at Pearl Harbor happened. So sometimes pollsters are in cahoots with the government lie. So is that happening now? You know, I don't know, but it's always sort of niggling in the back of my head. But even among these polls, Ron is doing better and better. He, of course, they keep trying to say he's not top tier, and Bachman and Huntsman are top tier. Bachman, who's way below Ron, maybe getting half his support, according to these polls. And Huntsman, of course, who barely, you know, registers a pulse on these polls, just because he's the son of a billionaire and he's a establishment guy, he's considered top tier. But they can't, you know, all that kind of description of calling Ron not in the top tier just outrages his supporters, makes them want to work harder, and doesn't have any effect against him. So it's quite extraordinary. He comes in, of course, third, even in these polls, the national and state level polls. Quite exciting to see. It's like all the work he did 4 years ago, and of course all the work he's been doing for decades in speaking out against the banksters and big government and the wars and all the rest of the depredations that Washington, D.C. visits on us. He's built up a huge amount of credibility. I don't think there's ever been anybody in American politics like Ron Paul, maybe politics anywhere like Ron Paul. So he has this huge credibility. He's sort of the opposite of the MSM or any other politician. People actually believe him. They actually believe he speaks the truth, and of course he does speak the truth. He always speaks his mind, and you know, everybody loves that. So it's...
Well, he predicted all of this economic stuff coming down, even to the point where it would bolster his own popularity in 2012 race. And now we see the Federal Reserve emerging as a serious issue. They asked about it at the CNN debates. Some of the candidates said, yeah, they would audit it, but they kind of wouldn't even consider reforming the system itself. Meanwhile, the beast is totally unleashed. It's consuming Europe through the bailout process and all the rest of it. There's no sign of stopping. How significant is it that the Federal Reserve has become a well-known term to the American public and that it's becoming a campaign issue?
Aaron, astounding. I've been interested in the Fed for a very long time. I can remember writing and talking about it in the 1960s. And I can tell you, nobody was interested. economists were interested. Nobody else was interested. Just their eyes would glaze over. Ron Paul, building on the great Austrian economists, Mises and Rothbard, Senholtz, Hayek, and so forth, has made this a popular issue. And, of course, as Rothbard always would like to point out, it's not enough to explain economic error. You also have to show that they're ripping you off. So that's what Ron Paul has done with the Fed. He's made Americans understand this is not just a mistake some institution in Washington is making. They are ripping off the average person, not only here but around the world, for the benefit of the big banks. Everything that's happening in Europe, and, of course, now it's open that the Fed is going to bail out the European banks and the European governments, which are in hock to the banks. Everything happening in Europe has to do with the banks, just like it does here. We all live in a bankocracy. So Ron Paul has made that an issue. And, of course, once people begin to understand that this is morally no different from a counterfeiting operation, only far more damaging than a local counterfeiting operation, realize that this is really a criminal enterprise set up by the big banks back in 1910, the Rockefellers, the Morgans, and so forth. They wrote the Federal Reserve Act, and it was passed under the evil Woodrow Wilson, and has caused endless trouble. When Ron Paul first decided to become a public figure and to give up his very successful medical practice, it was Nixon's closing of the gold window, which was the cutting of the final tie between the dollar and gold. Since that time, the Federal Reserve has been 100% a discretionary institution. They just print as much money as they want. There's no limit on them. And as Ron said right then, he said, this is going to make sure that average Americans are not going to see, their standard of living is going to be harmed for the benefit of the big interests. And, of course, that's exactly what happened. In fact, really, the average American family has not seen an increase in its standard of living since Nixon did that. Yes, we have wonderful gadgets. We have the Internet. We have our computers and iPads and all the iPods. I love all that stuff myself. But the average family's standard of living has not improved. I don't care what the government statistics are in terms of what you actually have after taxes in the current dollars to spend on your family, to put away for savings or whatever else. It's no different than it was in the early 1970s. That is a criminal act. And, of course, it's an act of theft. This is not just a mistake. It's a theft, a gigantic theft, the biggest theft in the history of the world, as a matter of fact, engineered by the Federal Reserve for the big banks and for the government and for the other big government contractors, also the military-industrial complex, the medical-industrial complex, big pharma, and so forth. All these people, of course, are all on the gravy train. They're all feeding at the trough. While the average guy is being strangled and forced to give up his few bucks to feed to these people. So Ron Paul has made this a tremendous issue, and I'll never forget more than 4 years ago when he spoke at the University of Michigan after the Michigan debate, when he said what was coming economically, that we were entering a very serious recession, indeed had already entered it. All the other Republican candidates, McCain and all the rest of these creeps, said, well, that's ridiculous, Huckabee and so forth, that's ridiculous, Bush is great, the economy is great, how dare you, take a Democratic line, which was their line, and criticize our wonderful president and his management of the economy. So after this, Ron went to the University of Michigan, a very liberal campus, and he spoke to 4,000 students, came out into the quad to hear him. And very unusual for college students to come out and hear somebody, 4,000 kids, and as he's speaking to them, and they're cheering him about foreign policy and everything, but when he started talking about money and the central bank, these kids started chanting, end the Fed, end the Fed, end the Fed. And that's where Ron got that slogan, came from the students. And some of them started holding up dollar bills that they had lit on fire as if they'd give a message to Bernanke. And it was a great, it was a tremendous moment, I believe a moment that will be looked back upon by future historians as a real turning point in this country.
Yeah, it's amazing. And then we have Rick Perry writing a book, also picking up on the Fed slogan, Fed up rather than end the Fed. And other things. It's really strange to see how they try to co-op Ron, even as he has complete success with the people. But the other thing is, I caught most of his speech from the California straw poll, and he's not only talking about money and ending the Federal Reserve, but tying it all into a natural rights issue, along with police shutting down lemonade stands, along with police not allowing people to sell raw eggs or raw milk and so forth. Where do you see things going on that front?
Well, you know, of course, Ron always talks about how freedom unites us, because maybe we don't agree with the next guy on every point, but we want freedom for the issues we care about. And there are people who care about healthy food, and they care about being able to have raw milk and have access to something other than foods that are manufactured by the big companies in league with the federal government. And these sometimes people are not libertarians, although I think that they're increasingly becoming libertarians. But so Ron Paul attracts the support of everybody, whether they're quote left or quote right, because we all want freedom. And as he says, it unites us. So I think the food issue is extremely important. When there was a recent, and of course you guys reported on this too, when there was a recent SWAT team attack on an Amish farmer for selling raw milk to willing buyers, that's something out of the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany. And in fact, of course, that's already, we live in a fascist state in this country. We've had a fascist economy of at least a Mussolini sort, really, ever since Franklin Roosevelt. Socialism was really never the danger here. Fascism has been the danger. And, of course, we live under a fascist government of big corporations and big government ruling the rest of us and in cahoots ripping us off.
Well, they built up a big government system and then rerouting the beneficiaries straight to Wall Street and the rest of the corporations.
Well, of course, it was always that. I mean, Franklin Roosevelt, for example, started Social Security for the same reason that Bismarck started Social Security, to try to fool regular people into thinking that, you know, the government was on their side. Meanwhile, they're picking their pockets and strangling their lives and their families and so forth. So it's always been a ripoff for the big guys. I mean, why would anybody think it's otherwise? I mean, are we really supposed to think that regular people have the influence that George Soros or Warren Buffett or the rest of these creeps have? I mean, it's like a naive view of democracy. In fact, I would argue that the great achievement of democracy from the standpoint of the regime is that it disguises, you know, makes everybody so that Americans so naively, and I would argue stupidly, refer to the government as we. Should we invade Libya? Should we go to the moon? Should we, you know, it's not we. The government is a separate entity. It's a parasite that lives off society. It's the most dangerous parasite in the world. After all, the U.S. government is the biggest, richest, most powerful government ever to exist by many magnitudes. And it's killed millions of people. It has no hesitation in shutting down a little girl's lemonade stand, feeling up people at the airports, which, by the way, they do to make us, to humiliate us and to make us feel that we have no control and we have to do whatever they say. That is the purpose of the feel-ups at the airport. It has nothing to do with, quote-unquote, security. And in fact, I tend to think the whole war on terror has its, as you guys do, has its chimerical aspect to it. But that's not, it's not because they're afraid of some Arab, swarthy Arab guy coming in. It's to oppress, control, humiliate us. And even taking off your shoes is an old technique from the CIA interrogation manual. It humiliates somebody to take your shoes off, mm-hmm. to be in your bare feet. So that's why they do it. It's not because of, you know, no other country in the world makes people take their shoes off. I mean, it's our enemy, the state. It's Washington, D.C. Forget bin Laden or all the rest of these guys. The enemy is in Washington, and, you know, that's why Ron Paul runs not for glory, not for power, not for control. He runs to dismantle the apparatus in Washington. He wants to stop the wars, stop the counterfeiting of the Fed, stop the ripoffs for the big banks and the big corporations, stop the ripoffs for big pharma, allow people to have the vitamins, just to take one issue that he introduced a bill about today, allow people to take the vitamins and minerals they want. The FDA, which is an adjunct of the big pharmaceutical companies, is on another tear about, you know, outlawing or at least making us go pay some rip-off price to a doctor, a government-approved doctor, to be able to get vitamins and minerals we want. What an outrage. I mean, again, this is, you know, Nazi or Soviet kind of stuff. And so we're living in a very dangerous time. On the other hand, there's more and more opposition from the American people. And, of course, Ron Paul is gathering that opposition, focusing it, and scaring the pants off the establishment. So it's very exciting, and we just have, I would say, even more exciting times ahead.
Well, we're coming up on the break right now. We'll have more with you on the other side. But where do you see this going as the NFL starts to adopt pat-downs, as we see bus and train stations patting people down, as we see shopping centers starting to get ready for TSA-style security. What does that say about the fascist government? And how do we say no when the people have already said no to the TSA?
Well, it's, you know, it's very ominous. And, of course, if the whole terrorist threat were what they say it was, long ago somebody would have blown up a mall or a ticket counter at an airport or whatever. Whether there's no, none of, this is all designed to make us the cattle, the cash cows, subservient to them. So I hope, you know, thank goodness we can buy online. We don't maybe have to go to the mall, but it's, you know, it's a horrendous thing for already American retailing is in trouble economically. This is a depression. So they're going to make it more difficult for customers to go shop. Thanks a bunch.
Yeah, of course, it'll kill business. We'll be back in just a few moments. Infowars.com. Coming up, we have Alan Watt and the great terrorism suspect who dared to research it. Special report from Alex Jones and more. Stay with us. Lou Rockwell. Okay, we are back again at Infowars.com. I'm still Aaron Dyke sitting in for Alex. The show's just beginning, but we're in our last segment here with Lou Rockwell of LouRockwell.com, talking about all things politics, all things the dollar, all things the Federal Reserve. And before we get more into the dollar and the quantitative easing, Lou, I wanted to ask you this. How can Ron have the most positive effect? We know you and Alex have discuss, can Ron Paul win? And of course, if it weren't a rigged game, easily, even with the rigged game, he's still dominating all these polls. We don't know yet what's going to happen once it moves into actual elections, but he's raised the Federal Reserve issue, made a lot of headway on that, been campaigning nationally since at least 2007 on the economic issue. He's gained so much credibility. And meanwhile, we have Obama being undermined from the left, from the anti-war contingent. Even the Black Caucus says they're fed up and they'd be marching on the White House if it weren't for the fact that they simply sort of identify with Obama. But why identify with the puppet when the whole system is ruined, Lou? And how can Ron Paul let the world know he's got the answers and the rest are just part of the same system?
You know, I think here's the conundrum. Ron, of course, as you say, has immense believability on the economy, not only because he's a genius, by the way, and a great economist, even though he doesn't have his degrees in medicine versus economics. He is a real economist, and he can speak with such authority and such truth. And of course, he predicted everything. So this is his strength. On the other hand, the Republican Party is a party of bloodthirsty murderers, cheerleaders. I mean, the kind of people who sat in the Roman Colosseum and cheered the gladiators slicing each other up. So I must say that's the way I think of most Republicans and, in fact, most Tea Party people. So here's the question. Can people's concern about the economy, fear about the economy, we all realize instinctively we're in a depression, that our kids and our grandkids are going to be worse off than we are. So if people will put that first, and I think this is very doable because not only because of Ron's tremendous stature, but because of what the government keeps doing to the economy and the Fed, they're making us poorer and poorer. So I think it's a race. It's a race. Will these people are not going to agree with Jesus Christ that blessed are the peacemakers. I don't see, especially the Christian right and so forth, I don't see that happening. But will they put that at a second issue and not worry about America dominating the globe and running every country and killing people by the carload? Will they put their desire for that kind of killing all Muslims and so forth, will they put their desire for blood below their desire to have some kind of standard of living for themselves and their family? I think that is the key. Ron is capable of doing it, but the unfortunate ally he's got in this is how the government is stamping on the economy. The more they talk about rate, you know, we're already exactly in the situation that was true in the 1930s. Professor Robert Higgs talks about this, what was called regime uncertainty. People stopped investing. Businessmen stopped hiring because they never knew what Roosevelt was going to do. Was he going to just be like a communist and confiscate everything, or like, you know, like Hitler or whatever? Nobody knew what he was going to do. And it wasn't until after the war that the economy came back with a bang, by the way, when the government was drastically cut, military spending was drastically cut. And in 1946, we had the greatest year of economic growth in American history by far, 30% economic growth in 1 year. Probably that understates it. An unbelievable explosion of prosperity. So that's what can happen. We don't have to be sentenced to poverty. We don't have to be sentenced to having our kids worrying about what's going to happen to our kids and our grandkids and great-grandkids and so forth. Because the economy is getting worse, Ron Paul not only has the diagnosis about what went wrong, he's got the cure. So that is, I think, where possible victory lies. We just have to see if we can all help him bring that about.
Okay, we're coming up on the break. Thank you so much for joining us. LouRockwell.com. Lots of great coverage there. Stay with us, too. Infowars.com. More coming up after the break.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We're back. It's the second hour. It's Monday, September 19th. I'm Aaron Dykes sitting in for Alex Jones. He'll be back tomorrow. And tonight on the InfoWars Nightly News, I didn't do a clean read of the guests. I want to make sure people know we have Dr. Russell Blaylock coming up. He's going to talk about vaccines, the Gardasil issue, and so much more. He's such an interesting guy. We interviewed him about a year ago during a conference out in Las Vegas. Really just in-depth topics. You've seen it on Prison Planet TV. But if you're not a subscriber, you want to become a part of the InfoWars Nightly News. It's going to be an incredible production. It is still just getting started, and the production value is great now, but it's going to be getting even better. We've hired 3 new reporters just in the last month and a half, dedicated almost exclusively to the InfoWars Nightly News. We've been building our infrastructure, getting everything reinforced and ready to go. And we're about to hire even new reporters to just bring you the most condensed and informative news broadcasts we can. We just want to make it really strong, and we need your support to do that because we are, of course, not corporate-backed. We don't have bailout money. We don't have big conglomerates funding this thing. It's just the listeners. That's you, people. And so if you're watching and spreading the information, that's great. But if you're in a position to help us financially, that helps tremendously as well. It's hard to make ends meet, especially as the economy continues to head downwards, and we need that support as much as anyone else, and that's why Alex has been really making this appeal to you. But we also have Alfred Adass coming up. He's going to be talking about the IRS, liberty, corporate tyranny, and he was talking so much about natural rights and how the system itself legally regards us as an animal, and it's very interesting how much that ties into the history of psychology from Hegel onwards, and the way they develop that into education, a la Charlotte Iserby. I'm sure she'll be on the show sometime soon as well. Now, tonight on the InfoWars Nightly News, we're also going to cover Ron Paul's emerging victory. That is, if you read the true polls and really grasp the issues, he's the clear victor. We're going to cover even more in-depth on the NFL groping. There's been a poll in USA Today where people are clearly against it, but I wouldn't exactly expect a downturn at the games, but there should be. Alex has asked people to protest and to boycott the NFL. We're going to get into that special report at the end of this next segment. And we're also going to cover the Gardasil issue, which is just exploding. And you've probably seen that clip if you've been a longtime listener. If you're a new listener, maybe we should play that sometime today. Or if not, we'll play it later on the show or something, where the Merck scientist just laughs about putting cancer vaccines, SB40, all this stuff into the vaccines for decades, and you know, it's a mystery. Why is there so much cancer? Why is there so much? Well, it's to make money off of the medical industry and to slowly kill us. It's really sad, but it's a fact. Anyway, we're going to get into quite a few of those issues tonight on the InfoWars Nightly News, but here on today's radio broadcast, also a TV broadcast at Prison Planet TV, we have so much more to cover. Now, we've gotten into the QE3, but I still think we haven't got far enough into it because it's just such a big issue. And Kurt Nimmo has written up a detailed report at Infowars.com. You can read it all there. But, well, we knew this was coming, but how could they just continue to print? I'm just so glad the Federal Reserve is coming out as an issue that people are starting to protest Wall Street, and I hope you'll go down there and join them. Let's see. Well, we've got statements from Paul Volcker, Bernanke, and the others from the Federal Reserve, but, well, we'll get into that on the other side, cover the NFL boycott and everything else going on with politics. Stay with us, Infowars.com. I'm Aaron Dykes sitting in. Alex back later.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We're back again in the long segment. This is Aaron Dykes sitting in for Alex at Infowars.com. And we're going to play his special report here in just a few moments, calling for a boycott of the NFL and a disengagement from this police state system. They are clamping down all around us. It's absolutely absurd. The people have already spoken out against the TSA and said no to pat downs, said no to total invasion of privacy, total disregard for the Fourth Amendment and all the rest of it. And yet we've known for a year and a half at least that the Homeland Security has plans to slowly but surely, and not really that slowly even, integrate these TSA-style pat-downs everywhere in our society. They talked about using cameras they could see under pedestrians' clothes. There's highway checkpoints. They've already started semi-random train station pat-downs and security checks, bus stations as well. We've seen news clips of. And now the NFL, being the what Lou Rockwell would call a fascist integration of the government, and I tend to agree, is adopting this boycott. I'm sorry, they're adopting the pat-down procedures after a man waved around a taser and everyone freaked out as if that's not a pretext that we could see coming. And so we're going to play that clip in just a moment. Alex's special report from Friday, still fresh, though, because I haven't seen anyone in the mainstream media say no, other than the poll, which I hope they'll bring me soon, showing that very few people support these measures, although how many of them are actually going to the games, we have yet to see. But ankle down, ankle to waist pat downs and waist up pat downs now at all 32 NFL stadiums. Just absolutely disgusting. I know we're covering that on the nightly news tonight as well. Meanwhile, Obama plans to tax the rich. I guess that's how they plan to raise the $1.5 trillion their little super Congress committee was supposedly going to deal with. Higher taxes, of course, squeezing out the middle class and further clamping down on the economy as a whole. And as I mentioned with Lou Rockwell, the Black Caucus is upset, too, because black unemployment is over 17% by the admitted government numbers. I'm sure much, much higher by the real numbers. We've covered those plenty of times on the show, but the pressure is coming down. In fact, I found the poll I mentioned earlier in the show. I wanted to discuss this with you. It is from back in August 18th, but that's not that long ago because this chart covers several decades since 1979, and we do have the document cam on that. As you can see, there's been low points back in the past, but ever since the late 90s, Clinton left office essentially with high 60s and 70s numbers, and things went down with George W. Bush down to about 43 of Americans satisfied with the national conditions. Then 9/11 happened, support jumped back to 70, kind of went down from the mid-60s down to that 36 area, and by the 2008 financial crash, down to 7% approval of national conditions. And what happened when Obama was elected? Things boosted only to a paltry 36%. The writing was already on the wall. And as you can see in the far edge of this graph, things went right back down to 11% approval of national conditions. Now, this is a Gallup poll. This is Gallup.com, people, from August 18th. And you can just see how this is tied with the total downgrading of the financial conditions and the police state that's been set up since 9/11. Things have gone straight down in a straight line down to 7, only with a brief bounce back with Obama. And so the writing is on the wall. People know he's lost his image, the hype, as some kind of savior, as some kind of a guy who could do anything. He has really no qualifications for the presidency. And even worse, all his advisors are traitors to this country and what it stands for. And it's going to clamp down on the middle class, the working class, the military beneficiaries. They're having their pensions cut. Retiree benefits for the military could face cuts. New York Times. This is just from yesterday. Washington looks to squeeze savings from once sacrosanct entitlements like Social Security and medical care, Medicare, another big social welfare system growing rapidly, but with far less scrutiny. The health and pension systems of military retirees. Now, there's more in that article, but as we discussed with Lou Rockwell, support for the empire is going to crumble due to economic conditions. The UK, England, Britain had to give up the empire. That's essentially why the U.S. became the major engine and payment drive for that. And it's going to happen to us, too, if for no other reason than economic conditions. They're going to stop paying the bills for the military and the rest of it, and we're going to have to bring some troops home. At least I hope so. Plenty other in the news. BA, that's British Airways, faces a 50 million euro bill for carbon emissions. Oh, that's a bad sign. Wow. British Airways faces a bill of nearly 50 million euro, the highest of any airline with carriers around the world, brought to the European Union's carbon emissions trading scheme next year. Meanwhile, we have Howard Dean saying he saw an executive order that requires the U.S. to comply with Kyoto. Oh, just absolutely traitors. And even admitting Barack Obama is a pure internationalist. Anyway, I want to go now to Alex's special report on the NFL boycott. And I hope you'll listen closely and tell your sports-watching friends that the bread and circus's time is over. We need to get serious about what's going on in this country. Do we have that report, guys?
InfoWars Nightly News with this special report. Well, darker days have come to our republic. The United States, once a bastion and light of liberty worldwide, is now an example of tyranny and oppression not even seen in Soviet Russia or Nazi Germany. Not even the Nazi Germans set up checkpoints and groped people's genitals. Now the NFL, basically under unlawful orders by Big Sis Janet Napolitano, has ordered the NFL to grope all 16 plus million of their fans that go into the sports supercenters every year. In fact, the teams have now announced today that starting this weekend, everyone will be groped. Now, before I get into this report, notice, first it's take your shoes off and take your belt off and take your jacket off. Then it's we're going to grope you on the outside of your pants. Then it's we're going inside your pants. Now we're going to put you in these microwave ovens that are killing the TSA workers as well. Now the TSA and Big Sis at the last Super Bowl are there helping run the security of the Super Bowl in Dallas. Now it's going to happen at every event. We're going to grope you from the ankles all the way up to your breast, all the way up to your neck. They say they're going to grab your wife's breast. They're going to take the diaper off of your baby. The same stuff that goes on in the airports. And people say, well, if you don't like it, don't fly. And then it's, well, if you don't like it, don't go to an NFL game. Here's the problem. It's always more, more, more 10 years after 9/11. TSA is announcing and has now shown up in, what, just 3-4 months ago in New Mexico, groping people at a prom. TSA has announced that they want to put their trained officers. So if you get knighted by the TSA, that they wave a magic wand, now you can violate people's rights. Police departments, state police, other federal police, and private security guards are now saying that they're going to have a right without a warrant to stick their hands down your pants. They're saying shopping malls. Janet Napolitano is at the Super Bowl and other games in your face as if you wouldn't be safe if she wasn't here taking all your rights. 9,000 locations like Walmart with telescreens saying don't trust your neighbor, only trust Big Sis, and running PSAs where all the terrorists basically look like Tea Partiers. This is all happening. This is the authoritarian overthrow of America. It has nothing to do with terrorism. The government admits they put the underwear bomber on the plane on Christmas Day. That was staged on record. All of this stuff is garbage. Amir al-Awlaki, number 3 in al-Qaeda, is hanging out secretly at the Pentagon. The State Department has now come out and said that they won't give up his records for his privacy. It's staged. They were giving Libya over to Al-Qaeda. They're giving Al-Qaeda a seat at the UN. They're admitting they're engaged in genocide, exterminating blacks, but that's okay. Al-Qaeda gets given a country, but you, your wife, your children get to have private security grope them. And that's all that's happening here, is our republic's being overthrown. It's a federal power grab. What jurisdiction does Big Sis have to be in all these big football games? What jurisdiction to be in these public-private partnerships at Walmart saying, you know, don't trust anybody? Let's say terrorism was real. You've got a better chance of dying from being struck by lightning or bee stings. Look it up. Or being bit by a snake. But we don't have checkpoints. I'm out here in the woods. You know, do we have checkpoints right out here? Because I'll guarantee you, there's copperheads. I'll guarantee you, I'm here in Central Texas. I've killed rattlesnakes in these woods. I've killed copperheads. Out at the lake, I've killed water moccasins. Should there be TSA everywhere because 500-plus people die a year or more from poisonous snake bites, more than terrorism? This idea that we're all guilty until proven innocent. This idea that government's got to be there treating you as if you're guilty up front and groping you. Think about it. Imagine growing up, if you would have heard that in the Soviet Union, which, by the way, they didn't do this, but imagine if they would have told you, in the Soviet Union, they grope you and grab your wife's breast and grab your genitals to go to a football game. How did I know all this was coming? In my film, Martial Law, 9-1-1 Rise of the Police State, I have State and National Guard photos from their own websites where it showed them in 2003, 4, and 5 having military out groping small children at college football games in places like Alabama and searching little three-year-olds, little play purses. This is about indoctrinating our children and turning our country into an absolute nightmare system. And they know you need to fly for business or to see grandma who's dying of cancer. They know you want to go see the overpriced football game. And so they're saying, okay, we're going to beta test and train everybody that this is okay and acceptable in these areas and then roll it out on the streets. So that's my final point here. This is all premeditated. Governor Ridge, the head of Homeland Security almost 9 years ago, that's how I knew all this was coming, on C-SPAN said, you're going to have Homeland Security approval to have a job. Everything you do is going to be tracked. Face scanning, license plate reading. Homeland Security is going to have checkpoints all over the streets of America, shopping malls, you name it, a total takeover. Worse than any third world country, worse than North Korea. Absolute, abject oppression, unspeakably un-American.
Infowars.com. Back again at Infowars.com. I'm Aaron Dykes sitting in for Alex. We still have lots more to come on the show. Coming up in the next segment, Rizwan Sabir, who was arrested and processed as a terrorist simply for being a journalist, a PhD student trying to talk on the topic. And then Alan Watt coming up, researcher. And I think we may get more into this, revolution, flash mobs, and brain chips. A grim vision of the future. So why is this police state stuff happening now? The NFL pat-downs, it has more to do with profiteering, more than just profiteering, that is. It's more than just Michael Chertoff making money off body scanners when he was Homeland Security chief. It's more than, you know, just building some kind of security complex around the NFL and the other shopping malls where they're going to introduce this. This is a clampdown because the system has known the economic crash was coming, and it knows if it doesn't control the people, they will become, as this report predicts, a Marxist-like proletariat, basically rebelling against the system over purely economic issues. That's what's coming. That's what Gerald Celente and people on this show have predicted for years and years and years, even though you just saw Michael Bloomberg trying to take credit for the prediction just over the weekend, you know, trying to stump and say if you don't pass Obama's, you know, phony jobs bill that isn't going to create jobs, then it's going to lead to riots and rebellions. Well, that's already coming because of the economic conditions they've set in place. So that's why we want to continue now with Alex's clip on boycotting the NFL and not putting up with this security system.
This is a psyop, plain and simple. It is so scary. Now, this is all being done so they can rob you blind. The country's bankrupt. Europe's imploding. They're announcing world government openly. They need to get this in place. And so that's why I'm here to tell you. Even if you don't go watch the overpriced football games like 16+ million Americans, what they say, 16.5 million Americans go to these stupid things. They're now admitting that there'll be 4 or 5 hours to get in with the groping. Don't be part of this ritual of corruption. Boycott it. And even if you don't go to NFL games, talk about boycotting it. Write letters to the head of the NFL. Write letters to their sponsors, most importantly, and tell them, I'm not buying jerseys. I'm not watching football. I'm not doing any of this. I'm going to go to a city council meeting and talk about liberty and freedom. Or I'm going to write my congresspeople. Or I'm going to call on the talk radio. I'm going to get on the field of issues to save our republic and our society. This is why sports has become so sick, because they mix it full of all the propaganda, all the police state garbage to sell you this tyranny. And now they're going to use it to fully condition you and your children to accept tyranny. So we must boycott the National Football League, because they are expanding this takeover into every facet of our lives, including highways where we don't have a choice. They're turning the entire country into a giant prison camp, a giant re-education center. So please join me. Start your own website, send your own emails, but create a huge buzz. We are boycotting the NFL until they tell Big Sis and Homeland Security to stop using them as a conditioning end cap to roll out and launch a total TSA occupation of America as the domestic police force and the internal passport. Boycott the NFL until they reverse this, or America will be destroyed. This is a serious, hardcore, Red Dawn takeover of jackboots, and the NFL is deeply in bed with it. I will be boycotting the NFL, and I will be speaking out against it. Please spread the word. Do your own YouTube videos on this, and let's continue to hammer this. We're going to be doing a lot more in the next few days and weeks. They picked the NFL because they know they can always sell the tickets, and they think you're dumb, and you'll put up with anything to go be part of this garbage and watch a bunch of crackheads basically run around on the field. Show them that your will hasn't been broken. Show them that you're not an idiot. Show them that you're not a moron.
Okay.
Show them that you
we're
understand
come
what
back
you're
from
doing.
That. And you can see the rest of that clip at InfoWars.com. It's on the YouTube channel, the Alex Jones channel. And Alex will be back tomorrow to rant even more about this, but it's so important. They obviously chose the NFL because it's a huge cultural institution. People tune in droves, especially at the Super Bowl. And they started the security last year here in Dallas. Well, this is Austin, but here in Texas, at the Dallas Stadium during the Super Bowl, and they knew nobody really was going to refuse it, and that's why they've chosen to fully implement it. And once people accept this, it's going to be hard culturally to say, no, we've always been doing, terrorism pat-downs. Somebody could get hurt. And after that, it's just going to become absolutely institutionalized. We've already said no, essentially, to the TSA, and now we're approaching the final stand. That's all I'm going to say about that for now. We have a guest coming up after the break. Stay tuned. InfoWars.com. I'm Aaron Dyke sitting in. Alex back very soon. Back again at InfoWars.com. I'm your fill-in host today, Aaron Dykes. Alex will be back tomorrow. We just saw his special report on the NFL boycott of the pat-downs as the police state continues to expand. Wouldn't you know it, just time with this total information revolution. The internet has overtaken mainstream televised and print media, and everywhere information is increasingly the threat. We have Alan Watt of Cutting Through the Matrix coming up, but right now we go to Rizwan Sabir. He's a human rights activist and doctoral researcher at the University of Strathclyde, where he's been researching Islam in British and Scottish government policy with a focus on counterterrorism. In May 2008, he was detained for 6 days as a suspected member of Al-Qaeda for being in possession of primary research literature. He was released without charge. He sued and won a sum of money, but essentially he was targeted for downloading information. So now information is the thing they have to contain, not the actual threat of real terrorism, of which he demonstrated none. Anyway, we're going to get his take on it and find out more about this story. Are you there, Mr. Sabir?
Hello, call me Rizwan. I am here.
Right, thanks for joining us. So why don't you give us the background on how this whole situation arose, what you were researching, and we'll get more into the implications in a moment.
I was researching at the time Al-Qaeda and Hamas. I was looking at the military tactics of both organizations and how they impacted upon, or how ideology affected military tactics. And whilst I was in the process of conducting a master's dissertation and preparing for an up-and-coming PhD, I downloaded a document off the United States Department of Justice website, nicknamed the Al-Qaeda Training Manual. The name was ironically given by the U.S. Supreme Court to convict the 1998 East African bombers. It was essentially, the name was given to convince a jury that this document was very dangerous and that the people that were on trial were terrorists. And it did that to some, a great success, and a conviction was secured. This document was then declassified and placed on the U.S. Department of Justice website, which is where I accessed it from. The ironic thing is that the same document, but in a fuller version, i.e. without the redactions, I downloaded a 140-page document, can be obtained via the University of Nottingham's own library, which is where I was studying at the time, or it can be purchased in high street bookshops, such as Blackwell's, Waterstones, Amazon, and W.H. Smith, which are high street bookshops in Britain.
And so tell us how you came to be arrested for downloading a declassified document, and what do you and your lawyer have to say about being put under suspicion for just something that's readily available?
The document was then sent to a friend of mine who was helping me with my research. He was a member of staff at the university. University staff found the document on his web, on his computer when he was off sick one day. They saw the Al-Qaeda training manual along with two academic journal articles, one by Quinton Wiktorowicz, I believe, of the University of Tennessee, and the other one called Bush's Revolution from Foreign Policy, along with the Al-Qaeda training manual. All three documents were referred to the university management. The registrar then unilaterally made a decision to call the police. He contacted the police. The police then arranged for the regional counterterrorism unit to come onto campus to arrest my friend. That morning when I arrived, the police hadn't ascertained where the document had come from. I went to ask if my friend was okay. And they also arrested me. It was only once I was in custody for about 10 to 12 hours that the mention of the Al-Qaeda training manual came up. I then informed them that this document was downloaded by me in the process of preparing for some upcoming research on Al-Qaeda for a doctorate. And they then realized that, oh dear, we have a major problem. They then kept me in custody for 7 days in solitary confinement, where I was interrogated on a daily basis. My house was searched. My parents were evicted from their house. Various property and various academic material, notably, was seized as evidence just to, provide the police with some kind of context or a charge that would stick to me that I was a terrorist. Any evidence was evidence that would be used against me. That's the kind of position I was in. That's where the manual came from, and this is what happened. Obviously, they couldn't prove anything, and I was released after 7 days of, being in solitary confinement and kind of placed back into society to carry on as nothing had happened.
No evidence in a climate where there is no evidence, where they let the real Al-Qaeda hijackers into the U.S., into Britain. No one's fired. No one's held accountable. And no one admits that, for instance, the underwear bomber, the State Department, helped him get on the plane, but people who are researching. Now, there's civil rights implications, there's kind of racial targeting implications, but I think even bigger than that is the kind of WikiLeaks implications. Why are people being tortured and thrown into prison and extradited and put on watch lists for downloading documents? What does it say about the internet revolution that's come and how they want to control information? Or what have you found in your research?
I think that's a really, really interesting point you raise. And, I'm looking at domestic UK counterterrorism, so I'm looking at the British War on Terror. And one thing that is absolutely evident in the plethora of anti-terrorism legislation that has been introduced since 9/11, and especially since the London bombings on the 7th of July, is that the focus of this legislation and anti-terrorism law is on preemptive action against those that hold information. So, for example, the police and the security services are not focusing particularly on those that are involved in active terrorist plots, because there's not that many people that are actively involved in plotting terrorism in the United Kingdom. What they are involved in is catching 18-year-old young people who, out of curiosity most of the time, or because they're feeling a bit naughty, have a look at something like the Al-Qaeda training manual, which is a legitimate, open-source, declassified document. They will be in possession of something like this. They will be found in possession of something like this. They will then be put through the criminal justice system. And with the way that the legislation in Britain is worded, they will then be convicted as terrorists. If you have a look at the statistics in Britain, I believe 39% of all terrorist convictions that have taken place since 9/11 up until March 2008, 39%, I believe, have been because of possession of documentation, i.e. information that can maybe assist somebody who's involved in terrorism. That's what the charge is. Now, whether it's actively useful for somebody preparing for an act of terrorism is a totally different matter. For example, let's take the Al-Qaeda training manual. Now, this document, I believe, from my understanding and my research, it was produced by a double agent who was working for the American Special Forces in the 1970s. It refers to modern technology as facsimiles and fax machines. It is hardly the stuff of modern terrorism and modern terrorists. It has no practical value whatsoever. Yet this is the kind of information that is being used to lock away people to prison as terrorists. And you're right, it is information, and the legislation and the kind of programs that we have in Britain, and I think this is extendable to Western Europe or you know, the northern nations on the whole, is that most of our policies and programs are to criminalize information and people who are asking questions by looking at information. And I think that's a really, really telltale sign that there's no real substantial threat. What we are threatened by is people knowing and understanding things that we would in the West rather than not understand.
Well, yeah, you mentioned the double agent who was involved. Of course, that's throughout the whole history of supposed Al-Qaeda. It's always been an extremist arm for a foreign policy goal, and it's very useful for them to clamp down as a and the police state domestically as well. But really, the domestic police state has more to do with economic issues. But where do you see on using Al-Qaeda? What has your research shown on how they use it for foreign policy aims?
Well, I mean, Al-Qaeda is an enigma. It's a mystery. Nobody really knows what it is. I remember the police asking me whilst I was in custody what Al-Qaeda was. And when I told them I subscribed to what Noam Chomsky and the author of the book Inside Al-Qaeda, Jason Burke, has written and said, Al-Qaeda is used to be an organization, a very small group with a core membership, no more than 15 to 20 people possibly, but is now turned into an ideology. I remember the police officers looking at me like I'd just told them that the sun is made of cheese. This is the kind of reaction I got. And for me, most police officers who are on the ground, who are actively working within these counterterrorism units, have frankly no idea of what they're confronting. The state uses the excuse of Al-Qaeda to justify its own security theater. It's that perfect bogeyman that just like communism and the Red Scare was in the, you know, the 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s and 90s, it's that perfect scapegoat. No one really knows what it is, you know, and that therefore allows the state to say and do as it wishes, because we are in this constant state of war against this enemy. I don't believe that the existence of Al-Qaeda is all that worrying. It's a very small number of people, if they even exist anymore, notably due to the American campaigns in Afghanistan, Iraq, and now AFPAC, as the counterinsurgency theorists call it. So it's almost a minute threat. What it is a regional force or regional forces that take on a so-called Al-Qaeda-ism, the kind of ideological persuasion to give themselves more international credibility and weight.
Yeah, and now conveniently the whole Middle East is in revolution and turmoil, and the West has even partnered with Al-Qaeda there in Libya. But what kind of chilling effect have you seen in the UK as a whole due to terrorism, and what have you seen in particular regarding your case?
I'm not sure I understand the question. Do you want to ask that again?
Yeah, have you seen a chilling effect in general from the Al-Qaeda thing in communities in Britain? What's the atmosphere been like, the fear element, and then more on your particular case and the process of being awarded this money?
In terms of the kind of, there's a community reaction to Al-Qaeda, and I believe that most people don't believe that it exists. Because no evidence is really provided, because it's a mystery that the state refuses to engage with its communities. I'm not just referring to the Muslims of the UK, but I'm referring to Muslims or communities across the board in Britain regarding this threat. Right. We don't know, you know, the nature of the threat. We don't know the seriousness of the threat. All we're told is that there was a bombing on the 7th of July in London. There were maybe six what you could deem to be serious and real terrorist plots that were carried out by what they are now referring as, lone, self-proclaimed Al-Qaeda sleeper cells, people born and raised in Britain that take up arms and try and fight the state. So no one really knows what this is. So there is a real reluctance to accept what the state is telling us, and for good reason too. After all, this is the state that told us that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction, and we went into a war, there were no weapons of mass destruction, and that has really affected especially the Muslim community, because all we see as the state is a state that is lying to us to justify its own policies and programs. So I think until you have an honest debate regarding Al-Qaeda and the threat that is posed to Britain, I think you will have severe, severe problems in winning and gaining the trust. Also, when you look at the fact of the matter remains that in the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, the attacks that are taking place that are targeted at British interests and the UK are coming from the north of Ireland. Now, I've looked at the figures, for example, for 2006 and 2008. We have in the region of 349 terrorist attacks, yet 347 have come from dissident Irish Republican groups. However, the press, the government, the state, the security apparatus, they don't talk about the north of Ireland and the threat that stems from that part of the country. Instead, it always tries to focus on Muslim terrorism or Islamic terrorism when there's been two incompetent terror attacks or two failed attacks that have taken place in that same time. Yet the response of the state is extremely disproportionate when it comes down to dealing with Muslims. In terms of your question, I'll stick a full stop in there. But in terms of your question regarding what I think of the compensation and the damages.
Well, yeah, what point were you trying to prove, and then how did the compensation come about?
The point I was trying to prove in terms of my legal case and fighting what I believe was a racist action taken by the police and the state when they were processing me through the system was I was trying to fight for, one, to clear my name, and two, for some accountability. And I believe that the £20,000 that have been awarded to me in damages, along with the acceptance that my legal fees will be paid, along with the fact that the police have now admitted that I'm not a terrorist, along with the fact that the intelligence that they hold on me, all the inaccurate entries have been agreed to be removed by the police, which I believe is a real, real successful resolution to a legal battle, an exhausting legal battle that has taken 3 years. Is this issue over, though? Absolutely not, because one thing that is overlooked is how public institutions such as universities in the UK have become deeply securitized. So what my case shows is how the university disregarded all policies and programs and processes that it was meant to follow if similar circumstances to what I experienced and what happened at the University of Nottingham arose. They totally ignored them. And in the climate, in the hysteria surrounding Muslims, picked up the phone and decided to call the police. Now, they also need to be held to account. No apology has been issued, yet they have actively sought, I believe, I have evidence to prove this. An academic who wrote about this and who's suspended at the moment has written about this, that the university actively sought to sabotage me, to discriminate against me and those who dared to support me in my struggle to clear my name. Until the University of Nottingham has also been held to account, this issue just cannot close in my eyes. It can't be buried as much as the university or the state tries to.
So we're going to be back in a moment after the break, but more broadly, the Bradley Manning issue with WikiLeaks. Again, he's been held and essentially tortured for leaking this information. Now, that was leaked information that wasn't yet declassified, but there's definitely a parallel between his case and yours, where the whole system is coming down on him for just trying to essentially understand what's been going on for the past decade in foreign policy and the domestic agenda. What do you think about that case, and what should be done with him, and why is there more attention?
I mean, Bradley Manning's case is absolutely tragic, and it shows that regardless of the fact that our democratic nations are committed to this so-called idea of freedom and transparency, what Bradley Manning's case sadly shows is that when somebody does try to live according to those principles, a man of great, great courage and integrity and bravery, when he does try to live his life and act according to those principles that exist, he is then punished. And Bradley Manning's case is a categoric example that when the state decides to neglect its duty and care towards its citizens, this is what you get. And Bradley Manning has systematically been abused by the entire system. He's now been tortured. He's not got a right to a fair trial. It's an absolute, absolute tragedy what Bradley Manning is going through. In terms of whether I have suffered the same as Bradley Manning, absolutely not. Bradley Manning's case is...
Well, you got a brief taste of it. We do have the break coming up. Hold that thought. We'll get back to it just after the break. Alan Watts still coming up, and we'll be back. Infowars.com. Stay with us. In the last segment of the second hour, third hour coming up with Alan Watt in just a few moments, but a little more with Rizwan Sabir, who was arrested for essentially downloading a terrorist manual. And the point I was trying to make is that you were held for 6 days without charge. Bradley Manning's been held now essentially indefinitely without charge, all for downloading and leaking information in his case, just downloading information in your case. And so why are the regular proceedings of law and justice not good enough to handle these issues if indeed there even was any wrongdoing, which hasn't been demonstrated in your case?
Sure. What seems to be applicable in times of insecurity or when the government states is the government claims there is a moment of insecurity, usual laws and procedures are suspended. Now, this usually has to come at a great cost to personal liberty. So people like myself, and more so like Bradley Manning, brave and courageous people like Bradley Manning, have to suffer the consequences. But the tragedy of the situation is that rather than be up in arms criticizing the state and the establishment for the actions they take, most of the population is fooled by the propaganda that the government usually put out to say that in times of insecurity, we need to justify these extreme measures, and they offer your security. What they fail, or what they probably realize but don't care, is that they know as well as anybody else that they will never be subjected to these extremely draconian and unlawful programs and policies. So therefore, they are willing to allow people to be held, like Bradley Manning, to be held indefinitely without the right to a fair trial, without the normal burden and onus of evidence being on the state to prove his guilt, because they know that they will never be affected by it. And this is the state at its most extreme, justifying and using all relevant measures to sell that narrative, and the public sadly agreeing and accepting that because they believe in this illusion that they are being protected by the state when it just couldn't be farther from the truth. In Britain, we have a series of programs that initially started off strictly as counter-terrorism programs, but have slowly creeped into everyday life. And that's how a nation becomes more securitized, and that's how the government, therefore, controls the population with a lot more ease and efficiency.
But there is no security. As you say, it's only an illusion. Securitized, perhaps, but security can never be lasting. They can't protect you everywhere, even if you bought into the fairy tale. Instead, we've had to give up our Western civil liberties and absolute disgrace. That's the only thing worth holding on to. You can't protect from, you know, a random person doing something. But tell us how you plan to move forward. Are you still researching this issue? And what do you think are the most important things to break that illusion and let people know what's really been going on with terrorism?
Sure. What I am doing is I am still researching UK counterterrorism. I'm going into my final year of my doctorate. I intend to complete that by October next year. But at the same time now, I plan to take all necessary actions through any means necessary against the University of Nottingham for the way, for the vindictive way and an illegal way in numerous respects that they have treated not only myself, but those brave and courageous people that dared to speak up for me and dared to stand with me. And I forgot the second aspect of your question, if you wouldn't mind repeating it, please.
Well, how are you looking forward, and how should we break this illusion of Al-Qaeda terrorism everywhere?
Sure. The illusion of terrorism needs to be broken when the community which is the at the epicenter of this problem, i.e. the Muslim community, especially in Britain, stops accepting what's being told by the government and comes out and says, you can't do this.
Well, I don't mean to cut you off. We're out of time. We're at the break again. Thank you very much for joining us, and good luck on working out that issue. It's an issue for everyone.
Big Brother. Mainstream media. Government cover-ups. You want answers? Well, so does he. He's Alex Jones on the GCN Radio Network. And now, live from Austin, Texas, Alex Jones.
We have now entered the third hour on this Monday, September 19th. I'm Aaron Dyke, sitting in for Alex. He'll be back tomorrow. But don't forget to join us tonight, 7 p.m. Central, on the InfoWars Nightly News. We have even more guests coming up then, and so much to cover. It's a great package, and we also need your support and subscriptions if you can help us. Otherwise, help us spread the information and get it out to the world about what's going on. Again, tonight we're going to have Dr. Russell Blaylock. We're going to cover the vaccine issues, and we're going to talk also with Alfred Adask on liberty, the IRS, and other issues related to that. Joining us now is Alan Watt. He's a long-term researcher into the causative forces behind major changes in historical development. His background is something of a Renaissance man with background in three professions, various books, religions, philosophy, poetry, and mainly published under pseudonyms. And he's been heavily involved in the music industry and a lot more. Well, overall, Alan's just really one of the most well-researched guys I've ever spoken to in my 5 years here. And I know he can bring us a lot of perspective on various issues. His website is cuttingthroughthematrix.com. And I know there's quite a bit he could get into. Are you there now, Alan?
Yes. Hello. Yeah, your volume is very low, my end here.
Alan, can you hear me?
Yeah, just about. You're very, very low.
Okay, guys, if you could turn up his volume while we work on the technical issues. But maybe you could tell us right now what are the most important things you see going on currently, Alan?
Well, it's planned chaos. You've got a world that's supposed to merge into one unifying force and under a government. We keep forgetting that because we get stuck on the chaos they introduce on the way, and we talk about the chaos here, there, everywhere across the world. It's in Greece, it's here, it's there. So I always try to keep my sights on their goal, which, of course, is a unified Europe, which they have. The crises in Europe are simply meant to bond them even further into giving up all sovereignty and bring themselves under one banking system, one bank for the whole Europe. North America is going through the same chaos because we're the second continent, actually the whole of the Americas, to be integrated. They've just had a meeting, by the way, and they've kept that awfully quiet. And basically they discussed the borders, that's all they're telling us. and have given all access access to all Canadians' data to the special security services within the United States. We're being integrated every month, basically, into the next step of the amalgamation. They're trying to do the same with the Far East, Australia, New Zealand, China, Japan. All these countries come under the third bloc. And this is really what it's all about. Carol Quigley talked about this. He said eventually it all comes under the Bank of International Settlements with the IMF running the countries or the blocs or regions. And, of course, a unified government for the world, that's supposed to come out of it all eventually. At the moment, they have to get a single government like Europe set up in for the Americas. And this is also part of the chaos we're going through now. Oh, we can't survive on our own. Look at the money situation. We need a unified bank. And that came out in the 80s during the free trade negotiations. They actually talked about putting a central bank for the whole of the Americas in Montreal.
Wow. Can you tell us what's going on right now in Europe with the bailouts and all the stuff happening with Greece and the U.S. Western role in funding it? Well, we'll get to that after the break. We're coming up on the music right now. Stay with us. We have Alan Watt and all of his insights and more coming up. Infowars.com. Stay with us.
From his Central Texas Command Center, deep behind enemy lines, the information war continues. It's Alex Jones and the GCN Radio Network.
We are back. This is the Alex Jones Show. It's Monday, September 19th. I'm Aaron Dyke sitting in, and on the line with us is Alan Watt of CuttingThroughTheMatrix.com. Alan, the question I was trying to put to you before the break is, what's happening now with Germany and France trying to create a new bank over Europe, all to do this ill-advised Greek bailout, and what will the Western countries' role be in paying for that?
Well, we already have a treaty. I don't know if people realize that Canada and the U.S. made a treaty with the EU and to help with the bailouts should they come. We're actually doing it already anyway. That was separate from the NAFTA deal and the European deal. And so we're all in it together. That's the whole idea of this chaos, this planned and well-managed chaos, is to get everyone to their knees until the public say, well, nothing's working. Please make it better. And they come forward with their new idea, which is an old idea, very old. They'll dust off the old the parchments they've all signed and got ready, and they'll present to the public the plan that was set up even when they created the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. Remember, Bretton Woods was part one, and the founder of it said there'll be a part two after he's dead, which is about now. And we're going through part two now. The idea is that a central bank must be set up for each one of these amalgamated, basically, continents. North America, Europe, and one for the Far East as well. They'll have subsidiary banks, of course, for the... They won't call them national governments anymore, but the partners within the region. And this is simply part two Bretton Woods we're going into with the central bank. And again, Quigley talked about that from the Council on Foreign Relations, from their own history records. That was the whole intention for 100 years, was to set up a supreme bank for the planet and a central bank for each one of the amalgamated continents, basically.
Yeah. Right. Well, amalgamation would be the key word, consolidation. We know the IMF with the third world, it's been so much more about conditionalities than anything to do with the debt. That's just sort of the inciting incident to get the country on the line, and then the hook is total takeover, and now that's happening in Europe, no?
Yeah. Well, the whole idea of the IMF is not to help third world countries. Never was. It was simply to start off with foreign aid. That was the con with foreign aid. And you give them foreign aid, you give them loans, you get them into trouble, they can't pay them back. And you go in and you grab all of the resources. That was the plan of the banks. And we must remember that even Rockefeller said the same thing, that we can't depend on national governments anymore. He said it's far better that an intelligent force, intelligentsia, and bankers who are used to dealing with economies run the world rather than leave it to the national interest groups to steer it the way they want to go and into chaos and wars. That was his excuse for it. But of course, it was even older than him, this plan. And we're going through it now. And they've already announced in the IMF and Europe that they want the right, in fact, they've taken the right of some countries to start to do all of their financing for them. But that's reading their books, doing their books, not leaving to their own governments to do so. The IMF wants the power to be the big chief, basically, who will do every member's books. That's all of your economy and what goes to welfare, what goes to Social Security, healthcare, all of those things. It wants the sole right to do all that and do away with that part of your government back home.
And when are we going to openly see the IMF on the United States preying on our own country here and on Canada and the rest of the West?
I don't think it'll be too long now, because they're not fools at the top. We think it's all about greed. But it's not. That's a big part of it, because they're allowed to reward themselves very well at the top. And they planned, of course, the bank crash. You can't take the reins of observation off of banks and let them go to it without them just simply ripping the whole continent off, which they did with their mortgage crisis, etc. But they plan to bring it down. You've got to get big changes happening. You've got to create chaos. And financial chaos is the easiest and the most powerful way to do it. And that's when the public knows, they say, everything's broken, it's not working, please help us. So we turn around to the government, the ones who are abusing us, and ask them to make it better. And they come out with their plans. That's exactly what they're doing right now. And as I say, most of it, unfortunately, in America, is kept fairly quiet from the mainstream media, because the media barons, that's their job, is to control all information to the public. Nothing about informing us about truth or anything. It's about media, it's about really factual retention to themselves. But they've had that big meeting, as I say, and another two or three to go. And by 2012, they want the Americans to be amalgamated. We've watched them since 2005 openly meeting together, two presidents and a prime minister from Mexico, U.S. and Canada. Signing agreements. They said that five to do. That was 2010, five major ones. And because there was such a backlash amongst those in the know, especially in Canada, and protests, they kept it quiet from then on, except for little bits in the paper. But they've just had another meeting. They go down separately now into Latin America and sign these charters separately, instead of going down as the three amigos that they used to do. And sign the charters, and they're talking about amalgamations, and sharing our economies. That's also sharing your tax base, basically. All imports, exports. We're already doing that under the last big deal we signed with U.S. and Canada. We're sharing a lot of tariffs for imports and exports. People in the federal government in Canada, bureaucrats, can actually apply for jobs in similar positions in the U.S. Federal government, and vice versa. It's been that for a few years. We are integrating, and all of this chaos is meant to bring it on even more smoothly, setting it up for a smooth transfer. And there's no real shock once we're totally amalgamated. It's all working already. And that's the idea of crisis after crisis. To the public, remember, it's all perception management. It must sound like a logical, if unfortunate, thing to do is to give up all sovereignty and amalgamate into one giant continental system.
Well, controlling chaos, I could see, is your key word today, and it's very appropriate. Just on Friday, we had Mayor Bloomberg predicting that there's going to be riots and economic rebellion if they don't pass the new phony jobs bill. Just more perception, as you say. Of course, as you know, I know you covered heavily at the time, they've been planning for economic riots for years, since at least 2007, openly in the public documents. The Army War College is written for people to get ready to control these economic riots. And now it's here. Do you see the NFL pat-down measures bringing TSA-style security to the bus and train and shopping centers as part of that same preparing for the economic collapse, or is that another part of the police state?
It's part of that for sure, but it's also part of this terrorism nonsense is here with us forever now. This is permanent state. And they're simply training the public to adapt. And they will adapt very quickly to the new system of total security, total observation, no bodily rights even to go unmolested anywhere. Even into a supermarket, you probably have a special card with the active chip, and if you don't have it with you, alarms go off, and the security grabs you and takes you off. That's all that's slated to come down. We forget, it's long before 2001, they were planning the amalgamation of America with Canada, Mexico, they brought Chile and a few other countries, Brazil into it. There's quite a few countries actually that brought into the NAFTA agreement quietly. And in Canada, in about 1998, they passed an omnibus anti-terror bill. Nothing was happening in 1998 in Canada. And Alan Rock, the federal government, rammed it through himself, basically. And then he went off to work at the United Nations. And even the journalists in Canada were saying, well, what's this? This is a total martial law situation. What's happening? No reason was given to the public. And they went back to sleep, as always, because they didn't see it being put into effect immediately. You've got to remember, too, inside the U.S., that they knew there was coming chaos even back in the 80s and 90s. They've been creating special forces within the U.S. with the police, working with troops abroad, getting training back in the 90s. Actually, 2001 was just the kickoff of the next part of the plan. They'd already planned it and were implementing it long before that.
Right. But specifically, what do you have to say now, only 3 years later, really 4 years later, on the revolution flash mobs and brain chips part of revealing the plan to come of a revolutionary population, particularly in the Middle East, police state, and the Western countries, Alan?
Well, again, that's why they were creating this big super internal army since the 80s and 90s, the multi-jurisdictional task forces, they call them up here in Canada. They've even shown us them practice the police practicing kicking doors in across the Middle East with the troops so they can come back here and do the same thing one day. So obviously, since they were going to use economics and inflation, unemployment, poverty to bring in this system, hyperinflation, they expect to riot. They don't make a move without figuring out every possible reaction from every segment of society, and they plan for that before they even make the move. So that there's nothing happening that's not supposed to happen, according to those at the top. So they're prepared to deal with mass riots, which they want, actually. And the terrorism will gradually be controlling riots. And the people, again, will adapt into that's really what this massive security system is for. Eventually, over the years, they'll adapt into that and forget all about the terrorists. This is a very old technique, and this is a very old bunch of rulers we're really living under, with archives of how to control whole nations, populations, and so on.
Yeah. Wow, that's just incredible. Alan, we're coming up on the break now, but we have plenty of more time ahead of us. Stay with us. I'm Aaron Dyke, sitting in for Alex Jones. We're back at Infowars.com, and tonight with the Infowars Nightly News. Stay with us. Okay, we are back. The websites are Infowars.com and PrisonPlanet.com. I'm your fill-in host, Aaron Dykes. Again, Alex, we'll be back tomorrow. Tonight is the Infowars Nightly News. We have guests Russell Blaylock and Alfred Adask, and plenty of interesting topics. Short segment now, but we've got a long segment coming up with Alan Watt, one of the preeminent researchers on the world state they're bringing in to play, and really how they're going to consolidate all these regions under, you know, one or just a few banks and under a global sort of system. So, Alan, I'd like to bring up, how fast is this coming down? How fast is it going to be the kind of widespread depression that perception alone won't be able to mask? And what will they do with the so-called revolutionary masses, whether they've identified the right problem or not?
Well, they already have their plans to deal with the revolutionary masses. They know who everyone is, and of course the internet's fantastic for that because they've got their pulse on the public all the time. There's no privacy at all. It's all for data collection. And so they'll be dealt with quite easily. They can come in and take them out very quickly, in fact, if that's necessary or the deemed necessary. And they already have internal armies set up. I mean, police are not police anymore. They haven't been police for a long time. They're really military guys. Most of the recruits for the last 15, maybe even 20 years are from the military. And they've had all the experience in rounding up people and putting them in the camps, etc. That'll be done very, very quickly. We saw that done, in fact, during one of the Olympic games, I think it was, in the States. And they went out, and within a couple of hours, had everyone rounded up that was on a list, hundreds and hundreds of people. So it's quite easy to do that. They've practiced for an awful long time. So they're not worried about that at all. In fact, I think they want... to understand that the battle is for the majority of the... what they call the silent majority in the general population. So there's always... the bulk of the population will always go with regular media. The status quo, the answers are given are enough to satisfy them. It makes them feel comfortable and cozy. They feel they're part of something. The image that's presented as their nation, their country, and all that kind of thing. So... rioters will be presented really as the new terrorists, you see, and that actually brings the silent majority closer to government for protection, and they're all for whatever measures are necessary to subdue this what appears to be righteous mobs in society. That's how it's going to be presented to the public, and all the plans, I'm sure, have been tested and put through computer simulations and God knows what else for the scenarios that are coming. But 2012 is a big year. They actually hope to have the U.S. and Latin America mainly amalgamated. Understand, if you watch the European Union, you can become a member, but you don't have to be totally integrated. It's a step-by-step process. And they hope to have at least in the first part of the integration with their peace and prosperity partnerships and all the rest of it, and then peace and security partnerships, etc. They hope to have it all done by 2012. So this might just, if they're on time, they'll manage to get the riots started because of the inflation. And the people living on the fixed lower incomes are the first to really, really come out and protest because they get hit first and they can't compensate for it. There's no extra income. That's happened, of course, partly in Britain too already. We see that. And they'll do the same in the States. It's a massive welfare system. There's a lot of people on fixed pensions across the country, and they can't cope as the prices escalate. This is all but done by design. Yeah.
Absolutely. And now we have the NFL starting to pat down its fans. They started this at the Super Bowl, but it's a new ritual in this fascist system that to even get the bread and circus is now first you submit to the security and then you get the games, Alan.
Yes, and to be honest with you, I personally have to bypass the mentality of the people who persist and going through it. If you have any dignity at all, you wouldn't even have subjected to the first pat down at airport. Just stop traveling. Simple as that. Same thing with games, etc. If you have no personal dignity, then go ahead and be patted down and be part of the big herd. This is a time when you have to decide as an individual where you stand on things and how far you're going to allow this incredible totalitarian system to go. Because believe you me, they won't stop there. They won't stop with pat-downs. You're going to x-rays, you're going to get body cavity searches. Anything to humiliate you and teach you that you're nothing. You're nothing.
I agree. This is about taking our lives back. Sorry to cut you off. We're coming up on the break, Alan. We're going to have plenty more time. Just after this, stay with us. We're just starting to get into it. I'm Aaron Dykes. Back in a moment. Okay, we are into the long segment now. I'm Aaron Dykes sitting in for Alex Jones. Again, he'll be back tomorrow. But right now, we're in with Alan Watt, who's done some of the deepest research I've seen on the bigger system they're bringing into place. So, Alan, we know they've set the stage for these economic riots. Obviously, all that's upon us. But the Rand Corporation also wrote 3 years ago in 2008, lobbying the Pentagon to start a new war to save the U.S. economy. We know they've also set the stage for World War III. The whole Middle East is essentially in revolution. How are they going to transform that to achieve their larger goal, Alan? And what do you see on the immediate front?
Well, it's so interesting, too, this strange RAND Corporation that's a non-profit organization, supposedly, that every country pays millions, if not sometimes billions of dollars to for their forecasts. And they're a think tank, supposedly. It's part of the institution. They were on the go during the whole Cold War. They ran the American society during the Cold War as part of game theory. You've probably studied that. And they used game theory that every citizen's personal profile into the supercomputer in the RAND Corporation, and they worked for the entire length of the Cold War with the Pentagon, basically dictating the lifestyle, the system, and the future for the whole of the U.S. So here they are at it again. They've never stopped, of course, because we're not really run by government, you understand. The government's there to put things into law, that's it, and pass on information to all their helpers. But the RAND Corporation, all the big foundations and corporations are the parallel government that Maggie Thatcher called them, in fact, the parallel government. So did Carl Quigley. That's what they are. We're not run by democracy or even republicanism. We're run by private corporations, and we always really have been. So, and that ties back in with Rockefeller with his comment on it's far preferable to have it run by bankers and intelligentsia and leaving countries to their sovereign destinies, basically. So we're well on our way to this. Getting back, though, to the TS, the pat-downs at the arenas, you got to remember how many things it fulfills in one go. Now, it's the only time that men today will try and bond with their sons is taking them to a ball game. And because they're not men at home, they're not men at all, in fact, today. But they still have this tribal instinct in passing on knowledge to your son, and this is what it is to be a man. So come and watch these guys bash each other on the field. And then he goes home, and he does what everyone else tells him to do when he's at home. But anyway, the son's getting brought up now. He'll get brought up getting taught that this is normal, son. You go through all this humiliation, and then you get your reward of watching the game. And so that it's going to help to train the next generation. This is here forever, this system, at least, for our lifetimes at least. This is here for an awful, awful long time. It's called perpetual war, constant conflict, they called it in the military magazine. And this is what they have got planned for generations, is to bring this whole world into this new order of things. And it's a completely new way of living. It's a system where you can't decide anything pretty well on your own as an individual. It's a whole new set of rules and how to live by. And you'll be taught eventually to serve the world state. That's to be the highest honor. They're already pushing all of that across Europe big time. They call it communitarianism, where the federal government is supposedly decentralizing its power down to the local level. And they already have these commissars from the private NGOs run by the foundations to be the leaders. And this is a new Soviet system, you understand, because this is how the Soviet system was supposed to be, ruled by councils. So each little community, each trade, each factory, each organization had its NGO speaker, supposedly speaking on behalf of the public underneath them, or that they represented, and that's called the Soviet. And this is to be a new Soviet system, an advanced Soviet system for the whole planet that we're going under. But just like the Soviet system was a big con, because they say one thing and do the other, private banks flourished incredibly within the Soviet Union for all their talk about a central bank run by the state. The private banks could flourish as long as they did not make their money off the profit or the profit off of labor. Now, lawyers can run rings around that, and they did from the beginning in the Bolsheviks right through the Soviet system, and the same thing with this system that's coming in. And those who serve the system, the higher up the level that they go, the greater the lifestyle they will live. So reward is a big part of it, but they do want a big mass at the bottom to live in poverty as we go through this, knowing we're supposed to all die off according to the military magazines, the think tanks for the military of the U.S. and for Britain. They both came out with the same basic projections up to the year 2040. They've done another one up to the year 2050. And they say there's going to be a drastic decline in population across the whole world, including the West, from now, basically, up until 2050. So this is not meant to fool us forever. We're supposed to die off. Most people are not having children to start with, except immigrants. And even the immigrants, of course, adapt the lifestyle very quickly. It's very enticing to be told as a child you can do anything you want. And they go and do it, and often kill themselves in the process through disease or various other means. But this is a long-term plan to reduce the populations. And even world government is not the end goal of it all. The military think tank said there'll be a world government for a short time. And then the world will consist of a few high-tech city-states, and countries will be gone, long forgotten, and even the regions that were under the United Nations will be gone as well. So this is all a stepping stone to the next stepping stone to the next stepping stone until they have their wonderful utopia for themselves at the top. High-tech city-states, those who survive will be in the science industries, basically, high-tech sciences, and the rest of the old laboring classes will be unnecessary. In the meantime, China will supply the labor and the manufacturer to keep essential things going until they bring it all down. So you're looking literally ahead for another 40 years, step by step by step. What we're going through right now is just the chaos to get us to amalgamate the continents completely into the regions, and then to allow a brief time for the United Nations, the World Bank, to take over, the Bank for International Settlements, and the IMF to run the economy and distribute the wealth of the world. This is what they call it. It literally means rationing out food under the United Nations. They've already said this is in their charter. Eventually, the United Nations will be responsible for doling out the food to each region, and it will be rationed. And if you can't, if you have too many people for the ration that you get, then you must find a way to bring down your population. That's in their charter.
Yeah, and that's the food is a weapon that Kissinger's so famous for. But of course, you know, Bertrand Russell said the same thing. John P. Holdren, along with his partner over there, writing the same thing in Ecoscience. And yeah, it's a hostage situation.
Yeah, economics, money, is so you can. It's one of the biggest forms of warfare. You can wipe out a country so quickly by using economy and banking, very, very quickly. And of course, it's all private banking, so we've no say in the matter. That's why they keep it private. And also, in ancient times, they used economy as well. They would do embargoes. They wouldn't allow any trade coming into or out of a city, state. Water. Water is up for grabs. They want one company eventually to run the whole world's water supply. The United Nations already has a whole branch dedicated to that. And same with your food. You have five agribusinesses have taken over the food supply of the entire planet. So this is all part of this global system of where they will distribute wealth. Also, power is a big one. In the 1930s, a group first came out with this idea that all labor and money anyway is simply energy in one form or another. And so they came out with technocracy, and they said that eventually they would also own all energy supplies. That's why a company that runs your electricity, for instance, is amalgamating with the big boys, the global boys, all the time. And they will ration your power depending on the area or region you live in or your social status. You won't need much if you're at the bottom. That's what they claim. And they won't lose money and profit off of it because they can ration, they can cut you by half consumption and charge you twice as much if they want to. And so they would all sewn up. And this is the problem in the so-called free trade type deal where big corporations are allowed to amalgamate and consolidate, monopolize, in other words, whole areas of everything you need for survival. You understand, what we're talking about here is an overall war plan, a very old war. And like all wars, you must look at history, ancient history to the present, and use the same techniques and update them for the present circumstances and you cannot lose if you have a big, big club at the top, all bound together by social status, hereditary status, a lot of them, financial status, and they're brought up in the best private schools and universities. They all join the same clubs as great, great, great grandpa, and these guys get together with the Council on Foreign Relations and literally do their bit for the big overall agenda. Remember that the Royal Institute of International Affairs is the parent company of the CFR. They couldn't call it the Royal Institute of American Affairs. It wouldn't have gone down well, so they called it the CFR. That's the American branch. They have a branch across the entire planet in every country now. They have a branch dedicated just for the European Union. Every top politician is a member of it. And they take their orders from the top. They must always get on board with consensus, regardless of the party they or the leanings they have. And Quigley said that. We take on communists, we take on socialists, we take on fascists, we take on dictators. They're all part of the same system. But they must all agree and come together to agree on after the big meetings to go along with consensus on specific areas. And that's what they do.
Yeah. Obviously, you said quite a bit there, but I want to go back to the way you were talking about them gaming the energy industry, and gaming technology essentially is planning the buffet of options and then preparing the response ahead of time. So no matter what they choose, they're ready to go. And I know you've talked before about how they use the deregulation climate to move forward things, certain football field of steps, and then when they switch things back over. And I know across the world, as Keynesianism kind of lost its favor in certain areas, they brought in the kind of deregulated Margaret Thatcher, Reagan-looking thing, but they've been gaming both sides of it all along and centrally planning it.
Yes, and actually, as I say, the politicians, I bypass, that my personal opinion, I bypass all politicians, because Quigley has been proven quite correct that every president, every prime minister in the major countries across the whole world since the late 1880s, has been a member of this organization that we now know as a CFR. Canada changed the name for their group recently because so many folk were talking about them. They simply changed the name of it. It's the same group. And the Royal Institute of International Affairs. It was started up, remember, by the most wealthy people of the period of the 1800s. And at first, of course, you had the Cecil Rhodes Foundation, and Cecil Rhodes was in partnership with Lord Rothschild to take over the world's wealth. He said that in his own diaries, to take over the mineral and gold and silver and water, all the resources of the world. That was the purpose of it. And then they morphed into the Royal Institute of International Affairs when they joined with the Milner Group. The Milner Group, Lord Alfred Milner, who was from Germany, they were comprised of bankers, the top bankers of the time, as international lenders, not just your local banks. And they joined with the Rhodes Society to perform the Royal Institute of International Affairs. The scientific branch is a Royal Society, that's also part of it. So the whole farce of giving the public democracy was just that. They were given royal charters to set up a parallel government, which they did. And they plan the world in centuries. They plan the populations. It's always been a big problem with them. What do we do in a post-industrial society with the populations? They don't believe in keeping pets around, like, you know, pet animals that used to be farm animals. They don't believe turning them into pets. So they're economically minded. They're for sustainability and their own survival. Sustainability means their survival at the expense of everyone else's.
It's incredible. And, yeah, of course, on the food, they've been using, just as Bertrand Russell wrote, diet and injections, the genetically modified food, the BPA and other chemicals they put into the food containers, and the stuff they put in vaccines. How much is that going to contribute to the depopulation as much as the kind of overt tactics of literal population management through food?
It already has. I mean, we've been living through it since about the 50s, starting with the polio vaccines, and all the killer viruses that were in them, some of the cancer viruses, that's all they do is cause cancer. They knew that at the time, like the Simeon 40. That's all admitted, it's out there. And of course, they always put a cover on saying, well, we didn't think it would do that much harm, which is nonsense. Because at the end of World War II, you find that the King of England actually had a world meeting with the US and other countries to decide to bring down the populations even further because the war hadn't killed off enough people. That's mainstream. You can find that in the history books. So they went after it. They don't ask for volunteers. Who's going to volunteer for sterilization to be dumbed down and to die early? It doesn't happen. So they go ahead with it. And you actually get glimpses of that if you read Charles Galton Darwin's book, The Next Million Years. He was a physicist, a Manhattan Project scientist. And he came out with his book about the next million years of rulership. This is the kind of boast he was giving. But he said the elite must go on, the physically and more mentally superior must go on at the expense of all the rest. And then he came out with ways to dumb down the public. He said even one of the best ways to get rid of the aggression, the fighting aggression in the male, was to find ways of putting in estrogen and hormones into the food or the water or into inoculations or all three. Now, this is a top world-renowned scientist who was at the pinnacle with all of the world meetings at the time on depopulation, coming out openly with the agenda. And we're living through it. The cancer rate skyrocketed from when I was young. And interestingly enough, they just came out with an article from the World Health Organization saying now that they're opening up the Far East countries and the lower economies, the lower countries, now that we're opening them up, there's going to be a huge explosion in those countries of cancer, just like that, just suddenly, you know, not telling you why. But of course, they're going to introduce all of the food injections. Then the UNESCO comes in first with the World Health Organization and makes sure that they all get their injections first. That's prime, because that's the one that targets the brain and drops the old IQ points a few points down.
It's incredible.
This is a war.
Nothing
is by accident here.
No, they really do just set the stage to unleash a certain amount of energy, build it up, and then they soak it back up economically and through our very livelihood. And, you know, we're just going to wake up with a demographic winter. No one could have children, and you pay for access to have the children you can have. And the cancer, it's disgusting, Alan. I know you know this, but it still sinks in. We'll be back with a little bit more after this in the third hour. Stay tuned with InfoWars.com. I'm Aaron Dyke sitting in. Alan Watts still with us. Okay, we are back at InfoWars.com here in the final segment. I've been Aaron Dyke sitting in till Alex is back tomorrow. But I do want to remind you about the InfoWars nightly news. We've only been at it just a little over 2 weeks, and we are really just getting started. Five nights a week, we're going to put really some of our best material into that condensed format. We've already brought you news packages. They're going to get bigger and better. And the guests have only just started to roll in. We get kind of an intimate Skype-based sit-down with these people to pick their brains. So tune into that. And if you're not a subscriber, I really think you might want to be. Alan, I want to give you the floor for the remaining minutes. But you mentioned the perpetual war, which, of course, in many ways comes out of Orwell's 1984, largely a critique of that sort of Fabian sect of socialism, that incremental slow socialism where you surround the population and herd them into these controlled areas. And so I know also meshing with that, Julian Huxley, the first head of UNESCO, really, he wrote in his own way about the clash of cultures, the synthesis that would come from kind of the West clashing then with the Soviets. But isn't it the same today with the Middle East? And what do you see on the horizon for the Middle East?
Really existing that have a different culture, a different system. They used to have no usury at all, which is a handy thing you have. But of course, everyone must be standardized into the one system, whether they like it or not. And if they don't like it, they simply get bombed into it. And then in comes UNESCO, the IMF, and all the World Bank and the loans. And this fake front called democracy, because we've never had democracy. That's the truth of the whole matter. But I've got a good show of it, of course, because it keeps the public. See, if it didn't give you democracy and the chance to vote every 4 or 5 years, they know you'd have revolutions. That's why they created democracy, this front of democracy. That's the really intention behind it. And you don't vote in a new bunch thinking that they're going to be better. You hope they're going to be better, but you're voting out the last bunch. You're so sick of them. And that's really what it's based upon, is simply a safety valve and hope. It lives in hope that it's going to get better. But your life's experience should tell you that nothing's been getting better, regardless of who's in. It's always been getting worse because it's a plan. It's nothing to do with the politics. As I say, they're there as a Punch and Judy show. You throw tomatoes at them. This is to do with a private organization running the world, run by very powerful, wealthy, intelligent, very old family to people, and this is the world agenda. H.G. Wells wrote about this in the 1920s, right down to eventually killing off those with inferior genes simply by sterilizing them. He says it's the most humane way to do it is just to sterilize. The gene pools will die off that way, the inferior pools, and then you're left with the better types and a reduced population. That's what he said. And even talked about bringing in windmills and, of course, the rationing of power. 1920s, Fabian Society, another branch of the Royal Institute of International Affairs.
It's not the news headlines of the day that quickly grab your attention, but Alan really knows what he's talking about. If you read the literature for yourself, you'll begin to understand it too. And that's the only way we're ever going to get any of this back, because as he said, they have it planned and they're prepared for the opposition and they're ready to essentially iron us into uniformity. Alan, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Your insights are very valuable, and I hope we have you on the InfoWars Nightly News Show coming up soon. That's about it for today's broadcast, but stay tuned for the retransmission. And Alex, again, will be back tomorrow, but tonight we have InfoWars Nightly News, and there's more where that came from. So stay with us, and I've been Aaron Dyke sitting in. Research it for yourself and visit the websites InfoWars.com, PrisonPlanet.com. Thanks to Alan Watt and the other guests, Lou Rockwell and the researcher. Rebroadcast coming up, InfoWars.com. Stay tuned to this transmission.